NPR.
Here lies Credit Suisse, a Swiss bank that was with us for 166 years until it met its demise this past weekend in a forced sale to its rival, UBS. Credit Suisse will be remembered as a global financial giant, which financed everything from railroad companies to tech companies, a bank beloved by both the very rich and the super rich. But Credit Suisse was also a troubled, some might say troublesome, institution, plagued by scandals, bad investments, and most recently, a bank run. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Adrian Ma. Today on the show, we'll talk with journalist Alice Fullwood about how this financial giant grew so big and why it fell.
This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Alice Fullwood, Wall Street correspondent for The Economist and co-host of its Money Talks podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Adrian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Is there an analogy or a metaphor in your mind that gives people like an idea of what Credit Suisse stands for in the world of banking?
You know, I think if you'd asked me that like 10, 15 years ago, I would have thought that it was like one of those secretive Swiss banks that looked after a lot of rich people's money. So it was sort of one of those elites of the banking world, and that it sort of in particular catered to sort of the wealthiest.
So it's like they have like different tiers of credit cards, like gold and platinum cards.
Yeah, so it would have been like, I don't know, like the Chase Sapphire Reserve or like one of the like fanciest American Express credit cards, I guess. But over the past sort of more than a decade, its sort of reputation has really taken a pretty terrible hit. It sort of became the problem child of global banking, really.
Okay, but before we get into some of those problems, I asked Alice to talk about how Credit Suisse made its money.
It had its retail bank, which was where it sort of collected deposits from sort of regular Swiss people. It had its big sort of wealth management arm, which looked after the sort of assets of wealthy people all around the world. And it also had its investment bank. And in general, sort of most of the really big systemically important sort of global banks were formed in this way during the sort of heydays of investment banking and banking in general, sort of that ran all the way up to the 2008 crisis.
Now, Credit Suisse survived the crisis, but Alice says the years that followed were sort of the beginning of the end for the bank. And during this time, there were three main trends playing out. First, there was the fact that interest rates in Europe were really low for a long time, which made it hard for Credit Suisse to make money on the sort of bread and butter lending it used to. Second, its investment banking arm made some spectacularly bad bets, investments that blew up in its face and lost the company billions. Third, and maybe most notoriously, the company was plagued by scandal.
Yeah, so it's funny. There have been so many scandals that it's hard to know which are the sort of biggest and most important to mention.
Well, how about the time that Credit Suisse hired private detectives to spy on a former employee? Or the time that some of its wealthy clients were revealed to have connections to human trafficking and corruption and money laundering? Or how about the multiple times it got busted for helping its clients avoid taxes? Now, despite all this, Credit Suisse survived. That is, until this past week. So, what happened?
It seems like the sort of various scandals and reorgs and problems that Credit Suisse was having essentially eventually led to the sort of total loss of confidence of its shareholders, seems to have been the sort of potentially fatal blow. So on March 5th, Harris Associates, which was sort of one of Credit Suisse's biggest shareholders, sort of stuck by it through all the scandals and restructurings, they announced that they had thrown in the towel. Then obviously sort of a few days later, you had the run on Silicon Valley Bank and the failure of that bank in the US. And a few days after that, the Saudi Arabian Investment Fund, which is Credit Suisse's larger shareholder, said, we're not giving you any more capital. We're done.
They're large shareholders. They looked at the company and they were like, you're cut off.
They sort of finally threw in the towel and said that they had to try and sort of make it on their own, I guess. And, you know, it transpires that they probably couldn't. So now they've had to be sort of forcibly merged with UBS, Switzerland's other large bank.
Can you tell us about that? So like that happened over the weekend. What happened there?
Yeah, so it's sort of fascinating deal that was put together. And sort of full disclosure for your listeners, I did actually work for UBS for a few years after I graduated. Mm. So UBS and Credit Suisse were like the sort of big rivals of Swiss banking. They were the sort of two massive Swiss institutions. They had, you know, both had huge wealth management businesses, huge retail deposits. And essentially, it's been described as sort of a shotgun wedding.
Wow.
It's been sort of long rumored that they might merge, and both banks have sort of vehemently resisted the idea that they should be sort of fused together. But essentially, what you saw from the Swiss National Bank over the weekend was them sort of thinking that this was the best possible solution to restore confidence in the sort of Swiss banking industry. And so in order to arrange that deal, UBS is going to pay Credit Suisse's shareholders sort of a fraction of where the bank was trading on Friday, but about sort of $3 billion worth. The Swiss National Bank has sort of agreed to help UBS bear any of the losses that it makes if it has to sell off some of sort of Credit Suisse's businesses. So it's agreed to sort of put up a maximum of 9 billion Swiss francs, which is sort of just shy of $10 billion to do that. And it's also going to sort of provide 100 billion Swiss francs of liquidity. And yeah, eventually, sort of after years of rumors and rivalry, the two banks will merge.
So that is, I mean, it's so interesting knowing now that context of them being rivals. It's like almost like hearing that Coke bought Pepsi, or maybe that Coke was forced to buy Pepsi.
If Coke bought some sort of very poorly run little brother of it, I don't know whether that's Pepsi, but some other sort of soft drink company that's really having a rough go of it.
Now it's worth noting here that a forced sale was not the only option here. For one thing, Credit Suisse held about $17 billion worth of these things called contingent convertible bonds, a.k.a. cocoa bonds. So these types of bonds came into being after the Great Recession, and they offered a really high interest rate to bond investors, which was because they were riskier. And the idea here was these bonds were essentially an emergency life vest for the bank. When a bank is crunched for capital, they can redeem the bonds to get out of that crunch.
These are often called bail-in bonds in the lingo because...
Huh. As opposed to bail out bonds?
Correct. Because instead of policymakers having to step in and bail out an institution, they are supposed to be able to essentially bail themselves out or bail themselves in by wiping out these bondholders. And so the first line of defense when a bank appears to be bust is that it sort of wipes out these cocoa bondholders and gets to sort of keep the money itself.
So why didn't it? Well, Alice says the worry for the government's part was that if Credit Suisse deployed this emergency life vest and it did not stop the sinking, that could spark more panic in the banking sector. So policymakers, out of caution, pushed UBS to instead buy up Credit Suisse. Now, another thing that is unusual about what went down is that you have a company, Credit Suisse, essentially going under. And normally, when a firm goes bust, company shareholders are the first to get burned. But in this case, the shareholders will at least get partially compensated while a bunch of Credit Suisse cocoa bondholders are getting nothing. So like zooming out from this particular moment, what do you actually think we'll think about this Credit Suisse situation months from now, years from now? Will we even think about it?
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely think about it. The sort of really big bank mergers of the past have been either the sort of making of or the undoing of a lot of institutions. So I'm sort of fascinated to see how the deal plays out. It's going to be hugely memorable either way.
Alice Fullwood, Wall Street correspondent for The Economist, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Viet Le and Noah Glick, with engineering from Catherine Silva. Dylan Sloan and Noah Glick check the facts. Kay Kincannon edits the show, and The Indicator's a production of NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Humana. Your employees are more than your coworkers. They're the heartbeat of your business. That's why Humana offers modern group benefits designed to protect employees and their families with dental, vision, life, and disability coverage. Humana knows every employee and every business is unique. That's why they listen to your needs and build plans with you and your team in mind. That's the power of human care.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
Imagine a house where every room follows a different architect's plan. Doorways don't connect. Staircases lead nowhere. Lost Patients is a new podcast examining our complicated system for treating psychosis, one that loses patients to an endless loop between the streets, jail, and hospitals. We'll ask how it got so bad and how it can get better. Listen to Lost Patients from KUOW and the Seattle Times, part of the NPR network.